Now, back in November, a Chinese scientist announced that he had helped create the first ever gene-edited humans. Gene editing has the potential to remove diseases caused by a single faulty gene. Now, there are more than 10,000 such disorders, things like hemophilia and cystic fibrosis. Now, this type of gene editing can permanently change the DNA of an entire lineage of people. So basically, once you change it in one person and that's removed, it doesn't reoccur further down the line. Now, the creation of gene-edited humans is banned in most countries, pending further long-term safety research and ethical discussion. But is this a medical revolution, or could this just be one step on the way towards designer babies? You can look at this from two different angles. Healthy humans, the argument is, or playing God and basically creating designer babies. 030 30 80 55 55. With me now is Dr. Brendan McCarthy, the medical ethics advisor to the Church of England. Good morning to you.
Morning, Vinny.
And the commentator, Andrea McVeigh. Good morning to you, Andrea.
Good morning to you.
Brendan, let's talk to you first. When you look at this, some people will think, well, if you can remove some diseases that really limit people's lives, then that surely is a positive thing.
Yeah, well, I think, Vinny, first of all, I've got to say there are two different things that can be done here. The process that you were referring to is germline genome editing, which will have an effect on succeeding generations. The technique that shows more promise at the moment is somatic genome editing, which means a gene is changed in an individual, and that is within that individual only. So there are two quite different things. The one where a gene might be changed in an individual and that changes his or her life is obviously less problematic, if you like, than the technique that will change either an embryo or one of the gametes of an individual, and that then has an effect on succeeding generations. Now, I've got to say, in neither case do I think that it's playing God. And I've spoken to a number of scientists who are involved in this work, and they certainly understand they're not playing at anything. They take this work extremely seriously. So seriously, in fact, that Professor He, the Chinese scientist that you mentioned in the introduction, the Chinese authorities have stopped his work because he acted outside their guidelines. There are lots of issues that have to be taken care of here, issues of safety, efficacy and prudence, as well as the ethical issues that we might want to discuss as well. And the scientific community and most observers and commentators in this area are absolutely convinced that while there is promise for the future, we're nowhere close to achieving any of the supposed endpoints that very often the media would project. The second international symposium on gene editing that took place in Hong Kong in November of last year stated very clearly at the end, and I can just read out what their final statement was. It says that they conclude that the scientific understanding and technical requirements for clinical practice remain too uncertain and the risks too great to permit clinical trials of genome editing at this time. That doesn't mean to say it won't work sometime in the future, but we've got to be realistic and we've got to push against the hype and say we're some way off this at present.
Andrea?
Well, we are still in the very early stages of this, but this really is that gene editing is one of the most exciting medical advances easily in a century, if not more. And charities are investing money in this. So though it sounds science fiction-y, this will happen within our lifetimes. The Cystic Fibrosis Trust is funding £750,000 into research. Cancer charities are funding research. This is something that would directly affect me. I do carry a mutated gene. I carry the BRCA2 gene. If you carry a mutation in the BRCA2 or BRCA1, and that stands for BRCA1 or BRCA2, it means you're at higher risk of breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and bowel cancer. And I carry a gene mutation. I had breast cancer, but I didn't actually know that I carried the gene mutation until after I had breast cancer. So if I had a child, that child would have a 50% chance of inheriting the BRCA2 gene mutation. That could be in either a boy or a girl. So I don't have children, but That would certainly be if I had have had a natural child, knowing that I carry the gene mutation. That's a very significant. People have to go through incredible thought processes to think, do I have a child which has a 50% chance of carrying this gene mutation?
Yeah.
A higher risk of breast cancer, ovarian cancer, bowel cancer. So there's that, and there's also the fact that you edit genes in things like cystic fibrosis, where they're talking about editing the genes in people who already have cystic fibrosis to, you know, make their lives easier in certain respects. So I think this is an incredibly, this is so exciting for people like me and everybody who carries a gene mutation.
You know yourself.
It's passing on to a future generation. This could be nipped in the bud. If I had had, you know, if I could prevent a child inheriting this gene mutation, that means future generations going on for hundreds of years wouldn't be at risk.
But do you know there will be people that will make the argument about the ethical issues and will say this does move towards designer babies, and whereas you may be able to remove serious illnesses caused by single faulty genes, you then may move over to people saying, well, I want a child that is will grow up to be 6 foot tall, that will be blonde, that will have blue eyes, that will have this type of skin. And that's the issue I think some people have. If you're going to be so specific about a human being that you're created, that's where you are playing God.
Well, there's a difference between being specific and saying, I don't want this child to have inherit a higher risk of cancer, and saying, I want this child to have blonde hair or blue eyes. I mean, it's highly regulated. The whole issue of gene editing is so highly regulated. In the UK, it's overseen by a thing called the Human Tissue Authority. So unless there's like a rogue state or a rogue scientist working outside, you know, the authorities and sort of governmental guidelines in any country, that's simply not going to happen. It's not going to happen that routinely you could say, go to the NHS and say, well, you know, I want a child with blonde hair and blue eyes, or to grow up to be 6 foot tall or a great basketball player. That's not going to happen. These things are so highly regulated. There's ethics authorities and the laws that surround these. But if you can stop, if you can prevent generations and generations of future children not inheriting,
but that is the fear. That is the fear, Brendan, as to where this will lead to. This will be the gateway to that.
I actually don't think it is, Vinny, to be absolutely honest. I don't know anyone working in this field who think even remotely in the future we're going to be at the stage of you know, blue eyes, blonde hair, and so on, because our knowledge of genetics is really in its infancy at present. You know, there are some conditions that appear to be tied to a single gene, and those will be the conditions that will be first targeted by genome editing. But even there, the trials that are going on in you know, non-human mammals suggest that even then, it's not as simple as just, you know, switching on or switching off or replacing a particular gene. You know, what's called off-target mutation can happen, where you target a single gene, but that gene is having the effect not just in that part of its own chromosome, but unknown to us, it's having an effect on the different chromosome, which is why we are years away from clinical trials. Now, if it were possible, or perhaps when it is possible, to make germline genome editing effective, and some of these terrible conditions would be eradicated within a single family line. Now, of course, you know, this is not going to wipe out any illness worldwide, because you'd have to screen absolutely everyone worldwide to do it. And then every individual embryo would have to undergo in vitro fertilization in order to make the change. So, you know, it's not just a simple thing of snipping a gene and everything's done. But if or when it is possible to look at these single gene mutations, I think that's going to be a wonderful thing. But what makes up you and me as human beings, just physically, never mind, you know, emotionally and intellectually and spiritually, that's a hugely complicated genetic mixture. And the idea that just tweaking a few genes will produce something that every mother and father in the country would want for their child is science fiction.
I just wonder if there is money to be made in something. I understand where you're talking about the research and where it is now, but if there is money to be made, and there are, for example, some cultures who favor...
There's money to be made in people preying on the hopes of vulnerable people, and that's one of my major concerns. Not the bona fide charities that were being...
No, and I'm not suggesting that, not at all, no. But I'm just saying, for example, some cultures favour males. You know, I just wonder if that is where this could lead to further down the line.
That's a possibility. The Human Fertilisation and Embryology Authority that oversees this in the UK have made it absolutely clear that they will not grant a licence for anything that doesn't pass through extremely rigorous regulations and conditions. But there is evidence already within the UK and in other countries, as you say, that some cultures favour male children, that sadly infanticide happens in parts of the world. There's some evidence, though it's difficult to be absolutely clear on this, that in some cultures and even perhaps within parts of the UK, sex selection takes place through abortion or through IVF. So that is a risk, but that's not connected to genome editing. That risk is already with us.
Okay. Andrea McVeigh, last point on this to you. Do you think would it become almost your responsibility then as a parent, if you're going to have kids, to have this done? You would be expected to go down this route if, for example, you did carry a faulty gene.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll have to project ourselves into the future, maybe 30 or 50 years' time. People who know that they have a family risk of certain cancers may be able to get their genes, their DNA tested, their genes tested, and find out if they carry a gene mutation. But certainly, I think, project ourselves 30 years into the future. If you could do a full health test, find out if you have any significant risks, and stop passing those on to future generations. I think that's where we're looking at. And although it sounds a bit scary because it's very, very different to the way we live now and the way we think about having families now, I think that in future it's definitely something that people are going to have to consider. And yes, certainly if my circumstances had been different and I was looking at having a child, knowing that it had a 50% chance of carrying on this gene mutation and going on to have higher risk of developing breast and ovarian cancer, that's something that people have to think about right now. Women all over the world are having to think about right now and make those sorts of decisions, and that's an incredibly difficult thing to have to do.
Very much so. Andrea McVeigh, thank you very much, and Dr. Brendan McCarthy, thank you as well.